So this week, I don't know, it was a crazy week, but I think most crazy stuff happened today, which was a report. I guess our day started with a report from Nikkei. I guess that's the right way to pronounce that as a, yes. as a white person. trying my best. I sincerely apologize if I'm botching that. But Nikkei reported that the Google Pixel 4 is coming later this year, which is the least surprising report they could have possibly put out. But I guess the headline was the Pixel Lite is coming this year at some point, which I guess is the second least surprising headline they could have put out at this point. And they also mentioned a couple other things, like the apparently there's a second generation Google Home, and apparently there's a Pixel Watch coming, and apparently there's a Nest Cam revamp. But yeah, this is our first, I guess, real made by Google 2019, like, really substantial rumor. And I think we should start the conversations with Google Home, because Nikkei actually has a little bit of a history with there, because this past August, they were the first to report kind of conclusively. There were bits and pieces of evidence before this report, but they were the first to report conclusively that the Google Home Hub was for real a thing. And then obviously, you know, late September, I think, came around and it was leaked and all that happened and then it was announced. So Nikkei, when it comes to Google hardware stuff, has a pretty good track record, as, at least as of most recently.
Presumably they have supply chain sources that are giving them a good picture of what's happening and what's coming.
Yeah, and they also mentioned, it seems like they have more than one source. Like, they specifically referred to the person who was telling them apparently about Nest Cam stuff, that this person specifically was directly familiar with the plan. So it sounds like they have multiple people, and that would make sense considering hardware at Google is so huge now and it's kind of spread out, and especially with Nest kind of being in its own little bubble still. I would assume, you know, you need multiple sources if you really want to get a full picture of what Google's planning for the fall. What do you think about this? Do you think that we're going to see some kind of like slightly revamped original Google Home? Is that how you interpreted this?
Yeah, definitely. It's okay. Well, the one thing that can improve is definitely the sound. That's the clear room for improvement. But besides that, I really don't know where Google's going with a Gen 2 Google Home. I know for the past year we've been saying, why is the $129 Google Home still on sale in context of something like a Home Hub and the Home Mini, which most people should just get that. So I'm very curious at what this upcoming product is and how they're going to improve it.
Yeah, I just can't think of... I mean, I was actually just using a Google Home, the standard Google Home, like just 10 minutes ago, and I'm having a hard time thinking of how you could really improve that product. It's just... it's so simple and so solid as it is. And I mean...
yeah.
I mean, there's some little things that have changed about, like, minor, like, design details that have changed about Google's approach since the original Google Home. I mean, for one, they're very clearly on, like, deeply on board with this fabric thing.
Yeah.
And that seemed like kind of like a halfway idea with the first one, with the base, you know, it had base options that were, like, $20 a piece, by the way. And I mean, it's cool, little level of customizability, and they had the metal options for, I don't know if there's any practical reason. They look cool.
And nobody bought them.
And yeah, no one bought them. But so, I mean, I think if we saw another Google Home that was kind of like in the same vein as the original Google Home, we would probably see, I think they'd probably do away with these $20 base interchangeable things. And they probably go the same route as like the Home Hub, where they have like three fabric options. Like three SKUs, right? Because like the current model, I think, only has one SKU. And then if you want anything other than the gray, you have to buy it, right?
Yeah, the bottom base.
So having a few SKUs would make sense on that front. Another thing is, if we think about the volume indicator, the lights on the front, I mean, the Google Home Mini, the four dots, Google Home Max, four dots, Google Home
Hub. And every other third party.
Yeah, and all the third. Yeah. So this is a design choice that was made at some point after the original Google Home launched.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
I think I prefer the original, the multicolored version.
Yeah, I don't really have a strong feeling about it.
Oh, I have a strong feeling about this. Colors. things need to be more careful and there needs to be more rights on products. I genuinely think like a good area of like innovation and differentiation is on the design of these smart speakers.
Yeah, but Amazon's Google is like the last company that you should be criticizing, right? Because they're probably doing it the best of anyone right now in terms of variety of color and options and design. I mean, the HomePod is you get white or black. And it has cool the Amazon Echo looks like a robotic metal. Like, it does not look homey at all. So,
yeah.
Got to give Google credit for...
That's very fair. Actually... Yeah, remember the OnHub Wi-Fi routers? Like, some of them had really crazy designs. Like, they had, like, wood paneling. And that might be a direction for Google to explore with different materials beyond colors. So that's another thing to do. But again, like, physical design, better speakers. Not really sure where else Google could go with this.
Yeah, I don't know. I think... another thing that I've been thinking about is, I don't know if Nikkei knows for sure that this is indeed a follow-up to the original Google Home. Although, you know, that makes the most sense and it seems obvious. But they said that, this is what they said, quote, the company will roll out an updated version of its signature smart speaker Google Home this year. And I feel like that could be interpreted in multiple ways. I guess you could, I think... You could argue that the Google Home Hub last year was, you know, an updated version of its signature smart speaker. I mean, it's kind of, it depends on, you know, the context, but like, I think I didn't read that and, you know, they didn't specify this is going to be a second generation of the original. They just said it's an updated version of the Google Home. I guess that word signature in there kind of makes you think, okay, it's the Google Home. But I think it kind of leaves open the possibility that it's not that. Although, like I said, it makes a lot of sense considering that one's getting dated at this point. It's the oldest of the bunch. And like I said, there's lots of design cues that have not been picked up on that one. And so, I don't know, it could be just a refresh that just like kind of updates it to in terms of externals and making maybe slight spec bumps in terms of speakers and, you know, whatever. And maybe it'd be really nice if they put a battery in it. That's, I mean, yeah, I would.
I'm here.
I would love that if the standard Google Home just had a battery and you could just, you know, move it anywhere in the house and take it with you if you want to. I mean, that it's a thing. Assistant speakers that you take to go are being made by JBL and, you know, all these other companies. And Google doesn't have one. And so they could do that.
Yeah. If we wanted to pass the word signature even further, I think you and I would make the case that the signature Google Home is the Google Home Mini, right?
I don't know. I mean, I think I would still say the Google Home
is the classic
the Google Home. And like I said, it seems like it makes the most sense. If they're going to do a new version of any of them, the original is the one that they're going to do. Even if it's just like Google is very well known for doing these kind of updates that are not really updates. Like, for example, this Chromecast update that came last year, which was rumored, it wasn't an update. It was just an external redesign to bring it in line with the rest of the hardware family. I could see a similar thing happening with the Google Home where it's like, they just call it the new Google Home. It's identical or maybe just slightly different and, you know, just has a more, I don't know, in line aesthetic.
With both the Google Home and the Google Home Mini, there are, let's say, hardware defects that Google could address in new generations. So that could be another intention of why they're rolling out a new version this year.
Maybe you could speak to that. What do you mean?
So how the original Home Mini had something to do with the fabric cover always depressing on one of the buttons.
Yes.
So that people can't press and hold on the center of the Home Mini to manually trigger the hardwood. People just have the volume controls. That's an unintentioned error that Google never addressed. So there is room for like structural redesigns, so to speak.
Yeah, and there's always room for, you know, just minor updates, you know. I mean, the speakers are, you know, a big part of the Google Home, and I feel like if there's ever going to be a larger Google Home hub, or if there's going to be a second generation Google Home hub down the line, I would like to see a better speaker in it.
Yeah.
Because it's just pretty wimpy.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, Kyle had a fuchsia dig that he believes basically gives strong evidence that Google is working on a larger version of the Google Home Hub, which he's lovingly dubbed the Google Home Hub Max, just appending that other Google Home branding that we already aware of onto the end. And yeah, maybe you want to talk about that a little bit before we...
So our Kyle thinks that this is a made by Google device, and that it shares many similar hardware components from the screen to the processor as the small 6-inch Home Hub. A possible screen size for this larger device is around 10 inches, so it would be an actual differentiator. And there's also possible hints that it could include a camera, which is something that Google's own device is lacking for something like Duo calls and maybe Face Match, which we've seen in the Google app. It's unclear if that's related, but there's just similar spec components for this Sherlock device.
And yeah.
Yeah, that's basically what,
I think what's interesting about this kind of story that he had was that both of these devices are running AmLogic chips, and they're different AmLogic chips, but they're just slightly different. And what's interesting to me is that the one that is, he's pretty sure, is the one that is tied to Sherlock. We don't know of it at all in terms of like it existing on any publicly available device or even dev kit of any kind. Mm-hmm. So, you know, its similarities to the one Kyle said that the two AmLogic chips have so much in common. That Sherlock's display driver is actually combined into Astro's. And Astro's, as we know, is Astro's the code name for the Google Home Hub in Fuchsia's source code. So, you know, they're very, very similar. But on top of that, we don't know of any existing devices. Obviously, we did our due diligence to make sure that the AmLogic T931 on Sherlock, our Google Home Hub Max or whatever you want to call it, didn't exist on the, you know, Lenovo Smart Display, LG Smart Display, you know, all these other smart displays that are out there. As far as we know, it's a completely new and unreleased chip. And so that also kind of would give credence to the theory that this is a first-party Google product, and this chip will be publicly debuted alongside a Google product, I think. At least that's how I'm reading it.
So while we're talking about AmLogic chips, on Monday we had a teardown of the latest Google app beta, and it revealed this very interesting assistant device ID class. That's basically, it seems to be a new category of assistant devices with the name, it was specifically Nexus AmLogic. And the most likely candidate that we came up for what it could be is referring to AmLogic chips. With that said, this is probably a reference to the Assistant Connect platform that Google announced at CES to easily make accessories for us that are powered by Assistant. For example, Google showed off this e-ink smart display that can show reminders, commute reminders, and that sort of thing. So there is AmLogic chips, and Google appears to have a working relationship.
Yeah, that actually is a good point. It actually kind of gives more, even more credence to the idea that this device, given that we know based on the source code that this device has a 10-inch display, it just seems to make just so much sense to be a larger version of the Home Hub. Another thing is the display resolution. I don't know if you remember, but when Kyle first found Astro in the Fuchsia source code, like, I don't know, months before we even had any substantial rumors about the Home Hub, he kind of ruled out that this was going to be a smart display because it had such a low resolution. We were like, no, there's no way this could be a Google hardware product because they wouldn't ship something with a crappy screen like that. It, obviously, it turned out the screen's fine. Doesn't make any difference for just daily use. But this 10-inch device is has a similarly low resolution.
Yeah.
At the smaller Google Home Hub has a 1024 by 600 and this one's 1280 by 800. So it just seems like it's just a naturally scaled up, same resolution, probably a very similar product. And also, yeah. I'll throw this in there for Alphabet Scoop listeners, is that we heard from a tipster like, I don't know, a year and a half ago. I don't have the tip like on hand, but an anonymous tip that kind of tip us off on the Google Home Hub even existing in the first place, besides the fact that Google announced the platform at CES. But, you know, it was one of those early tips that kind of tipped us off that that was happening. And that tip said that there were multiple sizes of the Google Home Hub in development and being tested. And so putting all these pieces together, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like people should be taking this rumor more seriously than they are. And if you're listening to this podcast, good for you, because you're actually hearing about this. Not that, I mean, it's still, I guess you should still take it with a grain of salt because it's still just, you know, trying to put a lot of different puzzle pieces together that could in the end mean nothing at all, because this could easily just be, for all we know, just internal hardware prototype that they're testing Fuchsia on for no reason. You know, like that's all it could
be. Everything is lining up.
But everything is lining up, and we know for a fact that Astro, which we found many, many, many months before the Home Hub was announced, ended up being the Home Hub. So there is precedence for this. So anyways, I think that's
moving.
Yeah, moving on. So off my soapbox. No one has reported this outside of us. Like, I have not found a single like backlink to this story, so
so yeah. I guess Pixel Watch first.
Yeah. I mean, this is a story that goes back all the way to Evan Blass, 2018. He said Pixel Watch was coming and it didn't come, obviously.
But Nikkei today reiterated that a Pixel Watch is coming, and this is something that we've heard from our own sources, that it is in development, that it is coming along. And our Ben Schoen wrote up a very good deep dive of what Google should be doing, a wish list for what their first homegrown smartwatch should have. And for the most part, we really do not know what Google is planning with these devices. The whole thing about them acquiring a team from Fossil is, it happened way too recently for it to be integrated into devices that may be close to finish at this time. So that's still something down the road. But I guess in terms of specs, we, with high confidence, can probably say it's using this Qualcomm's Wear 3100 chip. And again, just those like basic specs that all other Wear OS devices are using. So for Google, what they can differentiate on is hardware. Preferably it's good, like the Pixel phones. They preferably. But another thing is like the Pixel phones, good optimized software, which is actually a big thing that many Wear OS watches today are lacking. They're not very, the hardware and software integration is not apparent. So that this is an obvious place for Google to mature on. And I guess just other software features that Google could choose to first debut on its own devices before expanding to other Wear OS smartwatches. So
yeah,
it's coming.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen this year, but I would really like to see, a Google Pixel watch that's built from the ground up, you know, like,
yes,
Google Silicon and, you know, software and hardware, like everything Google, not dependent on any Qualcomm, just misgivings, and, you know, just build a product themselves. And although, you know, we don't really know where they're, or their silicon, like, I don't know, work and team and development is, really. I mean, we just know that they built the Pixel Visual Core, which was the first Google Silicon in a consumer Google with product.
Intel. Yes.
And hopefully we'll see more of that, but you know, chips are hard. So
yes, this is a years long process to
for sure
any silicon development.
But we'll talk about that a little bit in a minute. First, I want to talk about the Google Pixel 4, which the Nikkei report also kind of touched on that is happening, which is, like I said at the top of the show, very unsurprising. But we can say, according to a source, that this other thing that kind of surfaced yesterday, which I guess I'll just fill anyone in who's not aware, but this report from a website who doesn't even deserve to be named came out, exclusive, all caps, Google Pixel 4 might be modular, whatever, you know, and I basically wrote my soapbox on it. I tend to get inspired to write when I get really frustrated or mad about something, and in this case, I was pretty ranty about it, but basically, unfortunately, we're kind of at that point already where there's lots of blogs. I don't even have to name them. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably know them. They're just taking advantage of Google News, taking advantage of Google just SEO in general, and writing just blatantly false stories or optimistic stories that they know are, you know, very misleading. And this one particular story just happened to be the one that I ragged on because it's the first one that came out about the Google Pixel 4, which, as we know, is probably going to be a very hot news cycle very, very soon. Pixel 3 leaks kind of started in like April, May last year, and it's probably going to kick off pretty soon here too. But yeah, my gist on that was obviously that story's fake. Anyways, I just wanted to mention that according to a source, we can now say, as a matter of fact, that the Google Pixel 4 will not be modular. And so I'm just happy to report that this fake story was not only wrong because it's just stupid to like take a patent and extrapolate any meaning at all about future consumer products from patents, especially given Google's extensive history with modular devices. But it's also false because we can say it's false pretty authoritatively, according to a source. So there's another tidbit for those of you that are listening to Alphabet Scoop.
Yes.
So what else? What other hardware? I guess we covered Google Home. Oh, the Nest thing. Yeah. What about that? What do you think about that?
A new Nest camera. Which the more interesting thing about Nest is you had this report last year, I believe, that Google is working on some sort of rename, rebrand for Nest, this outside division that was once part of Alphabet and since moved into the Google Home division with the other speakers and smart displays. So this first new product coming out after the two divisions are integrated would say a lot in terms of the design direction, how they want to portray the security devices going forward. So it will be exciting from a design point of view and a direction point of view, but it'll be interesting to see if there's any actual hardware differences moving forward. I think it's just the latest camera, but I'd like to be surprised at what features they do or what exciting designs they pursue.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that Nest needs to address is software, not hardware. I mean, hardware is fine. I just think that their software is a complete nightmare.
And
so,
porting that infrastructure over is a big challenge. Nobody is denying that, but
for sure,
they Google. They should know a thing or two about fixing and handling large databases and consumer services. So yeah,
of all companies, they should be able to handle a camera streaming product.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't really have any significant thoughts on what Nest might be doing. Although, you know, just like any product, there's always room for marginal improvements over time, and I'm sure that. I don't know. I think there's a lot of things about the IQ, for instance. I mean, if you want to get the most high definition, you have to like pay for, you know, the Nest Aware subscription. It's like, if there's like certain things that Nest kind of upcharges for that I feel like could be standard at this point, because plenty of other companies have hardware and services that are providing these kind of features standard. Although I don't know, if Nest's software was better, then I would be able to justify why they, you know,
ask you to pay for it.
But yeah, that's one thing that I would think would be nice, if a lot of the things that are under the Nest Aware subscription now could be moved to just standard, and software could be improved, and maybe some other things that I can't think of off the top of my head could be more premium options. That's not my job.
Yeah,
that's Google's job to think about that.
And when they call it the Nest Cam IQ, the intelligence should be built, should be included with the product. All that software intelligence should be there without an extra fee. So yeah, it's doing good by the consumer would go a long way to further the Nest brand.
Yeah, so that pretty much covers the Nikkei report, I think. Another thing that some people are picking up on, which I don't think is really news, is that the Pixel 3 Lite, or whatever it ends up being called, is going to be cheaper than the iPhone XR at $749, which is
not hard to do.
Not hard. But yeah, that's pretty much it on that. What else? And on made by Google hardware stuff this week that we haven't touched on.
Well, one sign of success that Google is having at the Pixel brand is this a report earlier this week that Google Pixel is the fastest growing US smartphone brand with 43% year-over-year growth. But as others have pointed out, the US phone market is stagnant right now, and it doesn't take too much for a disruptor to make a play. But it's a good sign for Google's efforts.
For sure. Sorry, got a little distracted here.
Sure thing. But yeah, I guess something a bit more fun is during the Grammys, Google aired this really good Playmoji ad, which is their AR stickers featuring Childish Gambino. And I think this is one of their best ads ever, involving the Pixel anyways. They just basically showed the famous singer dancing next to his animated AR presence, and it was quite delightful, a minute long, and it was just really quite fun.
Yeah, Google's marketing budget is pretty insane for the Pixel, and
yeah,
for a lot of things on the hardware front, but this is one of those things that I feel like appeals to a lot of people that, I don't know, like, from the beginning, the Pixel has all been about kind of just ditching this rut that the Nexus brand was stuck in, which was just appealing to the most hardcore developer community. Not that developers don't like Childish Gambino. I'm not saying that. But it's just the kind of ad that I think appeals to the iPhone buyer. It appeals to the average person. And, I mean, my wife is kind of in that boat where she's kind of like, she saw that ad and she's like, I might switch. And it's like, there's no logic behind that. And that's another thing to think about when think about phones and just brands and marketing in general, is that a lot of times product purchase decisions have no logic behind them.
Yeah, it's just whimsy. It's just a big factor.
Emotional. It's fashion. Yeah,
absolutely fashion.
So yeah, I think the commercial is cool, and it's really good for us to see Google continue to double down on trying to market the Pixel at the majority of people, as we saw this week with this report that the Pixel is the fastest growing smartphone brand in the United States right now.
Yeah,
40%, right? 40-something
yep.
percent year over year, which I guess many people have pointed out is very unimpressive, given that it's by far like the smallest brand as of last year. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I think moving on, the other big news of this week in Google-related services was Google Fi expanding. So at the moment, Google Fi is a very online retailer, and the company is now making these their SIM cards available in Best Buy's 500 stores across the U.S., which is a sizable retail expansion for a service that, again, has always had an online presence, and it was always in the know. It was always a bit cultish, I guess, in terms of people who know the benefits of Fi. So this is a really, for Google, a really good way to get their name out there for people buying prepaid or who would become interested in the thing from Google, which I think carries a lot of cachet and at least will get people to try to earn more.
Yeah, it's another one of those things that Google has now taken big time, basically. You know, it's like they stalled for a long time just leaving Project Fi as a project, and now they're taking it seriously. And, you know, that was evidenced by the rebranding at first, but putting SIM cards in Best Buy stores is an even bigger deal, I think.
Yeah, and they're basically free SIM cards. The SIM cards cost $9.99, but you get a $10 service credit.
Yeah, and it's not exactly uncommon when it comes to carriers. You know, a lot of carriers charge $5, or, you know, a lot of times this is just free to order one. Just like on Google Fi, it's free if you want to get a line and order one online. But yeah, so it's $10 to buy one in the store, and then you get a $10 service credit. But also, people who are already Google Fi customers can also take advantage of this, because it just saves you a few days if you decide you want to add a line to your Google Fi family plan. You can just head to Best Buy and pick up a card for $10, and they too will get the $10 service credit up to six credits. So it's kind of like our boss Seth Weintraub, he mentioned, like, it's kind of like Google Fi opening a carrier store, because you don't really need one. We're kind of in, like, we're already kind of in an age where people buy
MVNOs, a big deal.
Yeah, and people buy like phones and technology products online. A very large percentage of purchases are made online anyway. So having a physical retail space for Google Fi is not really necessary right now. But this kind of accomplishes a lot of that. Having the foot traffic of Best Buy is, I think, pretty significant.
Indeed.
So yeah, what else? Was there another Google Fi thing? No, not really.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Google Fi. I've been thinking about switching back, but there's a problem. The problem is I can't use LTE Apple Watch with Google Fi.
That's
what's keeping me away.
Yes. Yeah.
Right now. If I could have Project Fi, and right now I kind of am doing the hacky thing where I have my Apple Watch on LTE, but I sometimes put my main SIM back into my Pixel, and so, you know, I can't really do a lot of the, you know, iPhone to Apple Watch tie-in stuff, and so even on Verizon, it's hacky to try and use an Apple Watch with an Android phone. But doing it on Google Fi is literally impossible.
Yeah, but again, like, it's eSIMs. Maybe this eSIM future will do a lot to help us get those data-only devices to work. But yeah, one day maybe.
One day.
One day. I guess the next major piece of news from Google this week was Google Maps sharing more about the AR navigation mode. So at I/O, they announced this cool walking navigation that takes advantage of AR core and augmented reality to place visual indicators of where you're going, like gigantic arrows and pins to say that you're finally there. And they'll also, when you bring up your phone and scan around the world, it'll highlight points of interest and shops and cafes and whatnot. And this is, for me speaking personally, this was the most exciting thing to come out of I/O 2018. What Google shared on Sunday and on Monday, as more publications got it, was they just basically detailed the interface and how it works. And it is a working product right now, as many hands-on opportunities have shown. But right now, it'll only be available for a few local guides, which is that like trusted tester program. And Google has yet to commit to when it'll be widely available for people.
Yeah, so like you said, it's a real thing. So that's good, because a lot of things that Google show off, I think about Google Duplex, which is kind of like, it's also a real thing, but it's not as close to being a real thing as this is.
Yeah.
I don't think. And with Google Maps AR, I have a question for you. What do you think? Do you think that? So when I keep watching, I watched the hands-on video that Wall Street Journal, David Pierce, right? Yes. Did mm-hmm. I watched it a couple times, and my thought, and he mentioned this in the video, that just kept hitting me, was that I feel like the awkwardness of holding your phone up in public is going to deter enough people that only those who are, you know, technologically savvy people are going to be the ones using mm-hmm. it. I don't see this becoming socially accepted, because I think even right now it's kind of already weird if you hold up your phone, right? Like in like
people
you,
think you're taking it, a picture.
You hold it down, exactly. People think that you're taking photos of them, and so yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of like there's a barrier there, you know, and yeah, it's a barrier definitely. That doesn't exist with having smart glasses on your head.
Unless they have cameras.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true, which was a critical flaw of glass. But
so I guess the argument that Google is making is that this isn't meant to be your primary. You're not supposed to keep holding your phone up. You're supposed to use it maybe at the start of your trip when you're trying to find your direction and whether you're walking in the right direction.
Yeah.
Or at the end of the trip to like finalize, apologies for the fire truck, when you're trying to just see where exactly the store is, or if you're at the busy intersection, you want to bring your phone up to see whether you go left or right or whatnot. And I guess the argument Google's making is that you're not using it 100% of the time. It's just meant to augment your parts of your walking navigation trip, which I think is fair. But I guess to address your point about it being socially awkward, I think with all technology, once the utility, once people see that there's a fundamental benefit and utility to how just cool and useful this is, I think that stigma would drop down. The problem that Google's trying to address is like you're walking around, you don't know what your cardinal directions are, and instead you can just point. That is genuinely very useful, especially in a big city.
No, I mean, it's no doubt useful, and I think that people like us will use it and just not have any shame about it. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the point I'm making, is I think that I would use it, but I think about, I mean, my wife is very like normal in terms of her like technology affinity or you know, enthusiasm, and she definitely would never use this. I mean, Apple could add it to the iPhone camera app or whatever and like make it a native feature, and she would probably still never use it. I just don't see her ever getting over that hump. Although, like you said, there becomes a point when something is just widely like people agree that there's this utility to it, and it just becomes a social norm because it's just so widely agreed that mm-hmm. the, you know, whatever potential awkwardness or whatever is the utility kind of overrules that. But I just don't see it happening with this, and it's unfortunate because it's so cool, but I feel like this is one of those Google products, and Google has lots of these kinds of products, that is not being really developed for right now. Like this, even if Google released it publicly tomorrow, I think this is one of those features in Google Maps that would just go unused. And a lot of people might not even know about it. I feel like this is one of those investments that Google's making for the 5 years from now, for the 3 years from now, whenever they do have a fully powered AR glasses kind of like equivalent or product, and you know they've already built this, right? So it's like they can build it now, and they don't need that hardware, they don't need that product, they can build the actual tool now, and it'll just be useful later.
Well, I would add about
that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah, I get that. Well, the big focus is navigation, AR navigation. I think, as you were saying, that the real killer feature here is being able to identify, like to be able to overlay Google Maps listings, business listings, as you're walking through the world. I think that's the real utility of this feature, this ability to this recognition. Like Google Lens is doing product recognition and that kind of thing, but being able to find where physical objects are in the real world in terms of just marking them over your heads-up display. I think that's where the real utility is, and that navigation is more the more straightforward feature that Google can offer right now with this technology.
Yeah, this isn't realistic, this idea that I have. I think I've gotten on this soapbox before on this show, actually, but I have many repeating soapboxes. But one of the ideas that comes to my mind and things, something that actually makes sense, is turning the camera into yet another always running phone sensor makes more sense to me. For instance, like part of the base of this technology is that it's looking for, it's basically using AI, I think, that's using machine learning to match what your camera is seeing with data that it already has from Street View. I think that's basically what it's doing. And then it's using that to, you know, get a better, more accurate idea of where you're standing and which direction you're facing. And what would make sense to me as a consumer product, or what seems to make more sense, is if that just happened in the background, right? So like your phone's in your pocket a lot of the time, but you pull it out and, you know, the camera is usually probably facing down at the ground most of the time, but occasionally that camera might get a glimpse, right? If it were running, if our phones had unlimited battery, right? And if it were running 24/7 and always looking for little visual cues that it might be able to match using AI to Street View data, then those little glimpses that the camera gets of the things around you on the ground or the buildings that are around you, or even better, when you're taking a photo of someone, like those ambient data points that it's just picking up and then using that data to make Google Maps better for indoor navigation and for all these different things, that makes a ton of sense to me. But that's kind of like the 5-year away kind of
idea. Can I pitch you on an idea which you just inspired me about?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so as you said, when people have their phones out, it's mostly looking down at the ground. It's not facing the real world. It's not really facing a street. It's at this weird slanted angle where you're just seeing the sidewalk. Imagine if Google got like companies to put like physical markers outside the stores. So that can it's basically an advanced QR code, but at the same time an orientation mechanism, where instead of needing the camera on and doing this comparison to Street View processing, your phone or device sees that physical mark on the ground and knows what direction it's facing and all that kind of stuff.
That sounds like a much, I don't know. It might be technologically easier, but it sounds like, and as an initiative, it would be harder to get out. Technologically easier because you don't have to do all the data streaming of footage to match things to the Google Street View stuff in the cloud. But I just remembered that, you know, all of our phones have front-facing cameras too. So I think if you're counting the stream of data that you could be getting from both the front and the back cameras, then if that was like physically possible, it could pretty much do what the AR thing that the Google Maps AR already does. It would just do it in the background. But the limitation there is data.
Yes. Battery.
Data is a big one, which will probably be resolved by 5G once 5G is completely ubiquitous. That bottleneck wouldn't be there. But then battery life is the bottleneck. That's the technological bottleneck for every innovation, basically.
It is. If we don't get like a battery innovation in 5 to 10 years, that's going to be a real shame when all these intensive things we want to do don't pan out.
For sure, for sure. So I think that was a good, little...
crazy look into the future of what we're discussing 10 years, 5 years into the podcast.
For sure. Yeah. All right, so that was pretty much our three main topics for the week. What else do we have? We had Google Fiber pulling out of Louisville.
Oh, yes.
Which is crazy. That story is crazy. They only recently entered Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, less than 2 years. So going into Louisville, Kentucky, Google Fiber's big idea in secret innovation, whatever, was drilling, when they're drilling these fiber lines, to only do it, to drill 2 inches deep into the sidewalk, lay the cable, and then just cover it with this, like, this proprietary cement solution. But the problem is this gooey material kept coming undone. And these cables would be exposed because they're only 2 inches deep. And Google had to keep repairing them and filling them in. And ultimately, the company found that this wasn't worth it. That it was literally easier to pull out of an entire city rather than fix it. Which they have done. No, in other cities, they're digging 6 inches deep. So in hopes of that, it will reduce the wear and tear. Micro-trenching versus nano-trenching.
Right. And Louisville was a big deal. They entered Louisville, Kentucky faster than any city up to that point because of this new technique. You know, with Google Fiber, it's such a big deal that they are able to enter the market quickly and start selling subscriptions because 5G is right around the corner and fiber will probably be obsolete pretty soon. So you got to enter quick. And obviously, you know, the whole point of the business is to make money, especially since they're kind of under Alphabet Access and Energy, and they have to be, they're supposed to be sustainable business.
Yeah.
But like independently. So there's lots of different pressures there that kind of go into that. But yeah, so the whole point was getting into the city as quick as possible and maybe innovating to make it easier for Google Fiber to enter even more cities. But
yeah,
too early, too soon.
It seems that Google is still committed, that Alphabet rather is still committed in Google Fiber.
Yeah.
They say they're still deploying on a daily basis. They haven't announced any new cities, but they are working continuously in the ones they do have. So it's really, I really don't know how much interest they have in fiber in the sense of like laying fiber optic cables in the context of these up and coming technologies. 5 to 10 years is not that long for 5G deployment in the grand scheme of things, but it'll be interesting to see when they decide to move to 5G, which seems to be the obvious case.
Yeah, I've never seen laying fiber infrastructure as something that seemed very googly.
But at the same time, it was very googly in that who else would do this? Who else would try to disrupt these big AT&T and Verizons of the world?
That's true, but not everything needs lawsuits to be disrupted.
Fair. That is very fair.
Although, I mean, I'm not saying that the current situation around internet service providers in the United States is not a complete like mess. It is. It needs to be disrupted in that sense. But yes, Abner's evidence because of his streaming quality on this show every week.
AT&T DSL. Not good.
But yeah, I think that you're right. I think that long term, I think that the fact that they haven't really entered any new cities recently, and they haven't continued. I mean, for the first few years, it was like every few months. It was like, we're now entering this new city, and you know, it was news. It was newsy. They're just trying to get as much press as they could. And now it's kind of just fallen off in the last year or two. Now the press is negative. We're pulling out of cities.
Another thing, interesting with Louisville and the other city that they were deploying these new methods in was San Antonio, Texas, I believe, that they didn't offer cable TV. And they instead, I think, they gave people a Shield Android TV, and maybe they gave them YouTube TV. I'm not sure about that. But anyway, the case is they were just focusing on data, giving people a data solution, which is smart, it's
I mean, I think that's the real need.
Yeah.
It's very it's future, it's like forward thinking, because a lot of people, you know, under the age of 30 don't even have cable subscriptions anymore.
Yeah. Channels.
So, yeah. Yeah, another, yeah, I really agree with you that, that Google Fiber is kind of stalling, and I think that it would make smart, make a lot of sense for them to pivot to 5G.
Like, yeah, and as soon make as possible. Sure.
Take advantage of this infrastructure they've laid, right? Like,
definitely.
They could use this.
And as they transition, just make sure the first customers get that get the new 5G service are your existing ones, if you don't want a PR crisis of epic
And portion. Even better, put it all under the Google Fi brand.
Ooh. Oh, don't get me started on that. Google Fi, Google Fit, Google Fiber. Autocomplete hell. Every time.
Some inside baseball for you.
Inside baseball.
Yeah, so another thing that happened this week, kind of not related at all. Google is refocusing Android Things, which is, I don't know, it seems like a non-story to me. I mean, Android Things was initially pitched as the OS for the Internet of Things, yes. Which is kind of what it became in a sense. In a sense, like what ended up happening was, you know, these partners like Lenovo and JBL, whatever, built these smart displays on
which Android are things. IoT devices.
And we also saw the Lenovo Smart Clock as well, which is also Android Things. These partners really adopted Android Things and took it and ran with it. And Google is not running with Android Things for its own products, notably. But apparently Google decided that they're kind of like pivoting away from this grander vision of Android Things being the OS for everything. And just saying, and yeah, we're just going to work with, and hobbyists, and we're just going to work with these partners on really doubling down on smart displays and these other Android Things powered third-party products, which, I don't know, it kind of worked out because these are technically Internet of Things devices. And
yes.
Yeah.
So, and the big fish they want to fry is Amazon and that. So I think they're prioritizing correctly. They're prioritizing their resources correctly. In the broader sense of the word.
Yep. All right. Well, why don't you know, we got five more minutes left. Why don't you just give us a little bit of a rundown on the most significant things? You don't have to do everything, but most significant things that we found in APK Insights this week. One thing that we started doing this week, we're going to start doing a monthly post of the top APK Insight stories. And Abner did our first one. What were our top app updates / interesting things we dug up this week?
So again, as I said at the top of the show, the Google app had this Nexus AM chips device ID for Assistant. Again, it's most likely Assistant Connect, so it'll be nice to see those kinds of devices going forward, and we'll keep tracking how they develop in the Google app. The Google app might be working on this Labs feature where people can experiment with features. It's unclear how that's going to work, but we saw an explicit reference to something called Labs, and hopefully it'll give users a chance to like actually opt in to try new features rather than being an endless A-B test hoping you get the A-B. Yeah. Google A-B test. It's Google's thing. In Google Duo, we've been tracking this feature for a while, face-like filters, which Snapchat and Instagram have. Ahead of Valentine's tomorrow, they're rolling out this special effect, which allows people to add floating hearts to video messages. Very cute. And in other updates in general, Chrome OS 72 on Friday started rolling out, and the most notable thing it does is it adds Android 9 Pie to more Chromebooks besides the Pixel Slate. So one of them is the Pixelbook, and with it, it gets this native Google Assistant. So instead of it being housed within the Google app, or basically like that, it's now this webby kind of interface back end, and so the big picture is that more devices beyond the Pixelbook and the Pixel Slate will start getting Google Assistant, which should really help with unifying assist. You have it on your phone and you also have it on your tablet. And I guess the last thing in app updates was Android TV had a nice tiny tweak with rounded corners for cards on the home screen and Steven's favorite Google Sans font applied everywhere.
Yes, I'm a fan of Google Sans. All right, well, I think that pretty much rounds us out for the week. Hopefully that gives you a pretty good idea of what was significant in app updates. I know that it's pretty niche and sometimes very deep in the minutia and maybe a little bit much for some of our readers, but you know,
that's where the future is.
All right, so yeah, for the show next week, actually it looks like Abner's going to be in San Francisco next week for a very
Samsung
special
Unpacked
event. Samsung Unpacked, and so we may or may not have a show next week, or we may have a show specifically covering Samsung. We'll see. We'll let you know, keep you updated on that on social media. We are trying to get better at this whole podcasting thing. This is episode 42, and if you have any feedback, one of the more recent things we've been hearing was that our audio quality, at least on podcasting platforms post-upload, was not good. And so we tried to address that. We're now doing kind of like a standalone recording independently and just trying to get better about making this a better listening experience for you. So please let us know if you have any feedback on the show. If you find parts of the show really boring, if you love our commentary, you don't like hearing about the news, whatever it is, let us know. And I'm at steven@9to5mac.com, or you can just send to tips@9to5g.com. And yeah, so until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday and publish every Thursday morning on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can also listen over at 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always, and thanks to Abner, as always, for joining me. We'll see you next week.
Bye.